Future-proof extra from News Talk.
Now, next Thursday, October 29th, is World Stroke Day. And up until now, the treatment for strokes and aneurysm has been a fairly invasive and costly process. But we're seeing significant improvements in the technology being used to treat them, and with that, a growing number of positive outcomes. Dr. Stephen Griffin is president and member of the board of directors of Ceres Endovascular. He joins me now. Hi, Stephen. How are you?
How are you doing, Jonathan?
Stephen, what's the difference between an aneurysm and a stroke?
So stroke is kind of the umbrella term used to describe two forms of stroke. One is ischemic stroke, which is basically the blockage of an artery in the brain. And then you've got hemorrhagic stroke. And hemorrhagic stroke is a bleed. And that forms from an aneurysm or a bulge on the side of the blood vessel in the brain. So the stroke really does capture both of those. And if you look at it today, about 85% of all strokes are ischemic stroke, which is the formation of a blood clot that blocks the blood vessel in the brain. And about 15% or so is hemorrhagic stroke, what we call hemorrhagic. And this is the area that we're focused in, which is dealing with aneurysms.
These all happen within the brain, right? If this clot doesn't happen in the brain, it's not a stroke or an aneurysm.
No. The downside, the effect, the impact it has on the actual patient is pretty much the same. Within hemorrhagic stroke or aneurysms, they fall into two categories. You've got the ruptured aneurysms, or these bulges that bleed, and then you have the unruptured aneurysms, which are the aneurysms that form and can grow to quite a significant size and have an actual impact on the actual patient themselves, but very similar. Now, with aneurysms, the ruptured aneurysms are the ones that people need to be aware of, because the mortality rate or the death rate associated with it is quite significant. Typically, a patient that has an aneurysm that bleeds, approximately 15% of them are dead before they get to the hospital.
Wow.
Within the first 30 days, the mortality rate or the death rate is in the order of about 50%. So it's really important to know and understand the symptoms of them, and obviously to get treatment as soon as you can. And then the remainder that actually do and are lucky enough to get to a hospital, the morbidity or the, debilitating effect that it can have on a patient is about 50%. And some of those can be temporary and some of them can be lifelong.
So if we imagine the artery as sort of like a straw, and then I suppose the aneurysm is sort of like a ballooning out at some point of that. Is that right? What causes that? And what is the problem, although it may sound obvious?
So an aneurysm can form. It can be congenital, so it can be a defect from birth. And it's usually where there's a defect in the vessel wall. And it's predominantly on the arterial side where the blood pressure is higher. And because you have this weakening of the vessel wall with, elevated blood pressure, obviously contributions coming from things like alcohol and smoking and that, they can cause this bulge to grow over time. And this gets bigger and bigger. And obviously it gets to a certain point where the patient then knows that they have one, because it usually manifests in some form of motor function or compromised movement. Typically, excruciating pains in the head and nausea. So like I said, that's one, it's congenital, but a lot of it is to do with lifestyle as well. So these usually start with a disease in the vessel. So people that have some form of cardiovascular disease, where there's a weakening in the wall. And this weakening, as I said, contributes to a growth of this bulge on the side of the vessel wall over time.
Is the bulge a deposit, or what's in the bulge exactly?
So it's like if you can imagine a tire on your car, and if you've ever seen where you get this little bubble forming, a weakness in the tube in the tire, and this bulge forms and it grows over time. Well, what's inside in that bulge as it relates to a tire is air. Now, if you look at it in terms of the artery inside in the head, once this bulge grows, it fills with blood, and the blood is flowing in and out of the aneurysm. And as it flows in and out of the aneurysm, it too contributes to the growth of the aneurysm over time.
So, but again, what is the problem? If it's just an extra bulge and blood is going in and out, why is it so problematic?
Because your head, your brain is contained inside your cranium in your skull, and it's a very confined space. And with the growth of an aneurysm, you're contributing, if you like, to the mass inside in that.
Right.
And as the aneurysm grows, it applies pressure on the brain. And as a result, application of pressure, changes in flow of blood inside the head can cause all sorts of
Right.
clinical symptoms.
Okay. And what size are we talking about? Are we talking millimeters? Are we talking centimeters? Possibly, how big do these aneurysms get?
Well, they can get to a very, very large size. I mean, they usually start out very small. I mean, it is in the range of millimeters and they grow to the size of centimeters. But if
Wow.
you have an aneurysm that's 25 millimeters or 2.5 centimeters to 3 centimeters, that's quite large. I mean, I guess for people to understand the concept of the size of it, if you can imagine the old pound coin before the euro came in, or even the 50 pence piece, you're looking at aneurysms that can grow as big as that in diameter.
Wow. So the treatment for this then is presumably to access that aneurysm and either cut it off or fill it with something so that it dies. What are the techniques that up until now have been used?
Well, the first aneurysms were treated back in the late 1930s. And this was performed doing an open craniotomy, which is basically cutting out a section of the skull and getting access to the blood vessels. It was a very invasive approach. And that, believe it or not, even to this day, that procedure is still performed in some of those aneurysms that are, less suitable for endovascular treatment, or what we call endovascular or minimally invasive treatment, which is making a small puncture in the femoral artery on the inside thigh of the patient's leg or in their arm, and threading a catheter up into the brain. What they do is that they apply in surgery, they place a clip. It's like a little clip that is put across the neck, what we call the neck or the entry point into the aneurysm or the bulge on the side of the vessel, and it isolates it. Now, what happens then is that the blood that's contained inside in the bulge starts to thrombose or to clot.
Yeah.
And as it clots, it becomes organized. So the end result is that you have what looks like a skin tag on the side of the vessel. So it's no longer at risk of rupture.
I see.
And that is pretty much inert and nothing happens. Now, this has evolved. I mean, like I said, it's been around since the late 1930s, 1937, actually, when the first procedure was done. In the very early 90s, then, there was a shift over to minimally invasive medicine. And this was the advent of the GDC coil, a platinum coil that looked like a long spring-like configuration that was threaded through these very small catheters and deposited inside the bulge of the aneurysm. And what happens is once you place a number of these inside the aneurysm sac, because it's foreign body material, the body reacts and it basically establishes or starts to clot around it. So you get a similar effect. So clot formation forms, and this then develops into more organized tissue. So the end result is that you have this little blister that is stable on the side of the artery that basically is isolated itself from the blood flow.
You describe this technique of going through the femoral artery. Is that a very difficult thing to do? I'm always amazed when I hear about that sort of a procedure. Like, how do you navigate that catheter all the way to where you want it to go in the brain if you're inserting it into the thigh? Is that a very tricky thing, or are these arteries not as complicated as I'm imagining?
They are complicated. However, having had the opportunity to observe hundreds of these cases, it just amazes me the skill level that these physicians have. They use basically X-ray guided imaging. And what they typically do is they inject, like it's a barium sulfate, but it's a radiopaque compound that they inject into the blood. And at the same time, they're X-raying these vessels, and it illuminates, so it shows up like branches of a tree. And then what they do is they they create a roadmap. And then they use this roadmap where they follow the device up through the vessels. So it starts at the femoral artery. They navigate it through the aortic arch, so the big arch that ends up in the heart. And then they will take either the carotid arteries, or they'll go out through the what they call the subclavians out by the arm and up to the back of the head and navigate these very small wires into the blood vessels. And then once they're there, they thread the catheters over these wires to position the catheter right at the entry point into the aneurysm, remove the wire, and then deliver the device.
It's just mad, isn't it?
Absolutely.
But as you say, very time intensive, a very specialist, and a tricky thing to do. You're working on something that might make this process a little bit more simple. Can you tell us about your Contour device?
Absolutely. So if you remember, we were talking about the evolution of the treatment of these aneurysms from open craniotomy and clipping to the deposition of these platinum coils inside an aneurysm. Well, if you can imagine, some of these aneurysms are quite large. And the bigger the aneurysm, the more coils that they take to fill that aneurysm, because you basically want to, you know, exclude blood flow inside in it. And this can take time. I mean, coils can range anywhere from 2 or 3 coils deposited inside an aneurysm up to 50 or 60 coils. And usually that translates to, you know, a number of hours in the cath lab where the physician is depositing one coil after the other.
Did you say now, up to 30 feet of coils in our chat beforehand, that's the level of length of coils that they have to put into some of these aneurysms?
Yes, one of the more recent ones that I actually observed in Canada, where we have another device that we won't talk about that works in combination with coils, there was about 30 linear feet of a coil that was deposited inside a very, very large aneurysm in a patient's head.
Wow.
Now, the one thing to bear in mind is that the longer you are inside the person's blood vessels, the risk profile goes up quite significantly, even with minimally invasive surgery. There's a risk of clots, there's a risk of something breaking. The patient is out and, you know, things can happen. So obviously the faster you can perform these procedures, the better. So with the Contour device, it's what we call the one and done approach. So the device is simply a braided disc-like structure that collapses and folds down into a very, very small submillimeter catheter and delivered to the site of the aneurysm. And it's deployed and deposited at the entryway into the aneurysm sac. And this all takes a matter of minutes. And, you know, since we've done a couple of hundred cases now at this point, and at this stage, we're performing these procedures in anywhere from 5 to 10 minutes. And the benefit is, you know, for the patient, obviously, you know, the recovery time is quicker. The rehabilitation is not as long and as extensive as you may have with any other procedure. Obviously, for the physician, if they can perform a treatment and don't have to come back in 12 months or 18 months later to perform it, because sometimes these procedures fail and the patient has to come back and be retreated again. And every time they come back, the risk profile goes up. So you may be lucky enough to get away without having any deficit from your first procedure, but it doesn't necessarily hold true the second time around.
This mesh, Stephen, is it essentially the equivalent of pinching the balloon from the outside, or how does it work?
Well, it's from the inside. And this again is what makes it very unique. The device sits inside the bulge. It doesn't sit in the parent vessel. Now, if you look at other devices that are out there that are used in combination with coil, they sit in the parent vessel to support a coil mass, for example, that is inside an aneurysm. The problem with that is that it is material that is sitting in blood flow. Patients are typically put on anticoagulation medication to prevent the formation of clot that could obviously cause an ischemic stroke event at some point later. Having a device that sits inside the aneurysm means that the dependency on this anticoagulation goes down. And if you can imagine in terms of a ruptured aneurysm, shall we say, that if you've got a ruptured aneurysm, the last thing you want to do is have your patient on long-term blood thinning agents, because it works against the healing mechanism that is necessary to basically make that aneurysm inert and shut that thing down.
What sort of aneurysms can this device treat, Stephen?
So to date, the majority of our experience with treating aneurysms has been with the unruptured aneurysms. And that's been primarily because the product has been under clinical trial. And under clinical trial, we go through a screening process with patients to select patients that have appropriate aneurysms to basically evaluate the product. Now, you schedule the patient, and then typically somebody from the company will show up with another experienced physician to be there and support the case. You can do that for aneurysms that are not ruptured. Now, for ruptured aneurysms, they're called acutes, and they're typically treated as emergency. And for that reason, we would not be able to orchestrate getting people there in time to perform these procedures. So for right now, it's predominantly being in on ruptured aneurysms. However, we have been commercial in Europe with the device since last March, April of this year. And now the product is available on the shelf, and it's at the physician's discretion if they feel that there is a case where there's a ruptured aneurysm, that they will then take that device and try to, and place it in the aneurysm and determine if it is successful in closing the aneurysm. Now, we don't, right now with Contour, we don't promote that. However,
that would be an off-label decision that's up to a doctor to decide whether or not it's an appropriate treatment for the patient.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a medical call. And then over time, what will happen is that we will, as the case experience, as we increase our experience and understanding of the product, then we can seek to extend the label indication of the product, making it compatible for both ruptured and unruptured aneurysms.
It's always good to hear Irish people doing well in the field of medical devices. It's one of the country's strengths for sure. Stephen, thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Jonathan. Appreciate it.